what are some of the ways that capitalism values money over life? I think it might be easier to talk about some of the ways that capitalism does not value money over life. I'm going to do that now. Okay, so we're done with that subject. Basically, it values money over life in every way. You know, I first got my introduction to this. Well, this is not my first introduction. I'll talk about my first introduction later. But one of my introductions to this was when I first became a grassroots activist 28 years ago now. And one of the arguments that was put out all the time by the politicians and by the timber company executives and so on was to say that we need to balance the needs of the economy and the natural world. And this struck me as really odd immediately, because what they're explicitly saying is that the needs of the economy are in opposition to the needs of the natural world. What they're saying is that the economy destroys the natural world if you have to have a balance. And that struck me immediately as insane, that if you want to have a sustainable culture, the needs of your economy have to facilitate the functioning of the natural world. Because if the needs of your economy are in opposition to the natural world, your economy will destroy the natural world. And that seemed very clear to me, but of course, making that argument explicit did not stop capitalism. And so let's talk about, so ask yourself, if you are attempting to defend some specific piece of ground or to defend some creature who is being destroyed by the economic system, what is the, okay, the arguments in favor of saving this river or saving this species or saving this place is that the place or species or process or whatever has inherent value. And it's valuable for the forest's sake or for its own sake. But what is always the argument in favor of destroying it every time? It's to facilitate making money. That is the one argument every time for destroying the planet. It will make money. Why are they going to cut down the forest? So they can make money. Why are they going to build a dam? So that they can power factories that will make money. Why are they going to do anything? And it's not just non-humans who bear the brunt of this. It is humans too. That why do they build sweatshops to make money? Why do they traffic arms to make money? Why do they traffic women to make money? It has become, long since become, the raison d'etre of everything we do. It is the purpose of life, is to make money. That is what's called the real world. When I was in college, a lot of my fellow students would be asking themselves, so what are you going to do when you get out in the real world? And what they meant by what are you going to do when you get out in the real world is, what are you going to do when you get a job? That's the real world. And their answers were always, so I'm going to buy myself a nice car. I'm going to get myself a condo. I'm going to go on vacations in Cancun. It was always, I'm going to back up a little bit. When I was in college and high school, I had this sort of habit of asking people about like their jobs. About 90% said no. And this was, you know, bus drivers, this was engineers, this was just anybody. I would ask random people on the street, do you like your job? And almost everybody said no. And I started wondering, what does it mean when the vast majority of people spend the vast majority of their waking hours doing things they don't want to do? And that's crazy. And this all sort of coalesced for me one day. I was I worked at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration when I was in college. And my bosses, my supervisors there, the scientists I was working with, for the most part, actually did like their jobs. And they would, if they called, this happened many times where somebody would call in sick and they would show up 3 hours later because they just couldn't bear to miss what we were doing that day at work. And on the other hand, I used to call in sick if it's a nice day. It's like, hey, I'm sick of work. I can't come in. And one day I was sitting, it was a beautiful day outside. It's in Boulder, Colorado. And I was in a sort of semi-basement. And you can barely see out. There are windows up about, 4 or 5 feet high. And you could see out into a nice, beautiful July day. And it's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm looking at the clock. And then I work until 5, and then I look back at the clock, and it's only 2:05. And I was like, 5 minutes have gone by. I thought it was 3 hours. I'm like, the clock is just going tick, tick, tick. And then I thought, God, I wish it was 5 o'clock. And then I realized that what I was doing is I was wishing away my life. I was wishing away the only thing we've got, which is time on this earth. And in that moment, I realized that selling your hours is the same as really as selling fingers, because you only have so many hours in your life and you only have so many fingers. And when you sell an hour, it's gone for good. And when you sell a finger, it's gone for good. But we would never go, oh, here, here's one finger. You can, I don't use this finger very much. You can have it for $7. And this one I use more often. So this one's going to cost you 12. And of course, Mr. Boss, you can have this one for free. But the point is, I realized that I didn't want to spend my life selling my fingers, selling my life. And that's another way that capitalism values money over life, is that we get out in the real world and we have to sell our lives in order to make money. And the fact that this is true is not accidental. The laws of apartheid were written explicitly to force subsistence farmers and subsistence just villagers, natives of South Africa, to force them into the mines, because nobody in their right mind wants to go underground and work when you can live in a functioning community and live with your community doing what it is to survive. I'm going to back up a little bit, and then I'll talk more about apartheid. In the 1830s, this Southern pro-slavery philosopher wrote to his Northern abolitionist buddy. They're both capitalists. And the Southern pro-slavery philosopher laid out for the Northern abolitionist buddy the land ownership conditions in which it's in the capitalist's best interest to own slaves, and the land ownership conditions in which it's in the capitalist's best interest not to own slaves. And it's very simple. If there's a lot of land and not many people, that means that people have access to land, which means they have access to food, clothing, and shelter, which means they have access to self-sufficiency, which means the only way you can get them to work for you is at the point of a gun. On the other hand, if you have a lot of people and not much land, as in a city, that means that people have no access to land, which means they have no access to food, clothing, and shelter, which means that they have no access to self-sufficiency, which means that they have to go to work for you for whatever pittance you want to offer. So in that case, the capitalist can actually pay the wage slaves less, because a slave owner was responsible for the slave's upkeep when they're a child, when they're old, when they're sick, and that's fairly expensive. And so if they could push that responsibility away and just hire them when they work them to death and then toss them out, that's a much better option for the slave owners. And now let's fast forward. And this is one of the things. There's a great line by John Mohawk, a great American Indian leader, who said there is no sovereignty without food sovereignty. Because without food, you must work for the others, which was the central point, to take us back to apartheid. That's the central point of the apartheid laws, was to, you have all these people living in subsistence means. They were living perfectly contentedly as they had for thousands of years. And you need to force them into mines. So what do? You force them into the wage economy, the money economy, by making a hut tax. They now have to pay a tax on their house. Okay, how are they going to get the money? Somebody has to go to work because they didn't have money before that. Everything was community exchange. And they would put a dog tax. They had to have passes to move from one place to another. How do you get the pass? You have to have employment. So it's all about forcing people into the wage economy. And my point is that it's not just that this culture values money over salmon. It's this culture values money over human life as well. It values money over all life. And I'm going to go a different direction with this for a moment, that when you... Years ago, I was sharing the stage. I may have said this in another video, I'm not sure. But years ago, I was sharing the stage with Ward Churchill. And we were talking back beforehand, we were talking backstage. And I said, how could the Germans have been so stupid, the World War II Nazi Germans, how could they have been so stupid to keep such meticulous records of their atrocities? They would keep track of how much gold they pulled from the teeth of dead people. They would keep track of how many people they killed. I said, that's just crazy to keep track of atrocities like that. And he looked at me and he said, Derek, what do you think GNP is? And what is GNP? GNP really is a measure of how quickly you convert the living to the dead. That's what the economy does. A living forest is worthless to this culture. And yet, how do you make it worthwhile? You cut down the trees and you turn them into 2x4s. A living school of fish is worth nothing to this culture until you kill them, turn them into fish sticks, and sell them. That is how this culture puts value on everything, is how it can be converted to cash. And if it can't be converted to cash, it is worthless. And so what this culture does, what the economy does, is it once again converts the living to the dead. It converts a living forest to 2x4s. It converts a living river to kilowatts. It converts a living human into human resources. I remember when I was teaching college 27 years ago or so, the first time one of my students said that they were majoring in human resource management. I thought, my God, I've fallen into Nazi Germany. It's that humans are resources too. Everything is a resource as opposed to just being what it is. So how much does this culture value life? I'm sorry, how much does this culture value money over life? That there are stolid scientists who are talking about the oceans being dead within 30 years, the oceans being devoid of fish within 30 years. There are stolid scientists who are talking about the sixth great mass extinction on this planet. There are stolid scientists who are talking about how this world has been bathed in endocrine disruptors, and they're fucking with human beings. They are not just causing fish to suffer terribly, not just causing amphibians to suffer terribly, but humans as well are getting messed up. But what's most important? What's most important is making money. That's still more important than the continuation of life on this planet. As this culture grinds away at everything, we continually hear, gosh, we can't put in place any environmental regulations that harm the economy. What is most important? Well, I'll leave for another video the idea that there is something beyond the making of money, which is actually, I think, the important part of the process is the conversion of the living to the dead. But for now, what is most important is money is more important than life. Money is more important than human lives. Money is more important than life on the planet.